Wherever you are on your leadership voyage, it starts here.
Welcome to Leadership Voyage, the podcast dedicated to your pursuit of becoming a great leader. My name is Jason Wick, and thanks for joining for Season 1, Episode 8, in a discussion I had with Erica Chestnut. Now, Erica is a delight to talk with, and I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. We talk about core values as a springboard for a lot of different conversations, including quality, culture, leadership, the relationship between procrastination and perfectionism, having tough conversations. There's a whole lot of stuff in this conversation. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Erica Chestnut is self-described as fun, quirky, clever, and sassy. And her leadership style begins and ends with relationships. With over 20 years of experience in the tech industry, from application development to spinning up new quality departments, Erica has learned to lead with grace, patience, and a little bit of snarky humor. She started her career as an application developer, gaining a deep understanding of business processes, software development life cycles, and the role quality plays in achieving business goals. She's an empathetic servant leader whose mission is to help people lead from a more compassionate space to build teams that are engaged, empowered, and excited. I think you're going to enjoy this discussion as much as I enjoyed having it with Erica Chestnut on Leadership Voyage. Hi, everybody. I am here with Erica Chestnut, who I have waited a long time to speak with. Hey, Erica, how are you this afternoon?
I'm well, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks. We're going to talk about core values, and amongst some other topics, I think probably, but core values is the area we wanted to focus on today. And jumping right into this, Erica, I reached out to a colleague of yours that you used to work with directly, Miriam, a principal engineer at Calendly, and she gave me a little quote about you about core values. And it says that Erica lives her values in the one-on-ones she has, where she not only asks you how you really are, but she reads how you really are. I've never been great at expressing my feelings, and with Erica, a lot of the time I didn't need to because she could see it on my face even when I tried to hide it. She never forced me to say anything, but she has a gift of knowing how to ask a question so you feel safe to answer. She lives her values by helping others to do the work themselves. Don't get me wrong, if you need her, she's there, but she lets you solve it. She gives you the space to take a problem, figure out why and how it needs to be solved, and then action on it. I can't tell you how many little brainstorming sessions we had where she was able to push me to find the answer, or how many times I struggled to solve something and she was a sounding board for me. I saw Erica live her values every day we worked together, even when it was hard, even when she was overwhelmed.
Gosh.
What do you think? What are you feeling hearing something like that written about yourself?
I tear up a little bit. Miriam is impressive. And I saw that from the very first day that we met and from the moment that we started working together. She was impressive. She was oversourced and frustrated because she wasn't feeding her passions. And it's one of the things that I talk about when it comes to teams, and I'm very passionate about, like, I want to make sure that you're feeding your passions in your work, that you're doing things that light you up. And she wasn't, and it was frustrating. She loved the company, but she didn't feel valued because she wasn't walking in her passions. And we worked really hard together to craft the right role. And she had to grow in some areas, and the company had to, like, see her differently and all of those things coming together. So for her to share that is, like, I tear up just hearing, you know, the sentiment and how she felt and how she saw me, because it is how I wanted to show up for her and everybody around me, especially the women that I coach. Yeah. So
well, that's great.
I got to call Miriam when we're done.
There you go. I mean, that, thanks for the honest reaction in the moment. And I mean, I think we've got someone in Miriam here who highlights, you know, how you bringing the, when you find a spot where you're feeding your passion, it sounds like to me that you can have this effect on someone else. So
I wanted to launch with that while also quickly saying, you know, I first saw you speak during a keynote, one of the many virtual conferences during the early COVID time. It was in 2020, and I remember a specific anecdote in there in which you were talking about a company launching an update to their site or something for a sales promotion and a big deal. And when you click the link in production with real users, real customers, there was the cat video playing. So hard to forget. However, your passion, your energy, your personality really came through in that keynote, and I wanted to talk to you. Ever since then, I am curious, what attracted you to speaking or public speaking keynotes? How did that get started?
I didn't choose the game. The game chose me. You know, funny enough, that was my first keynote.
No way. Okay.
And I think I shared during the keynote that Star West was the very first quality conference, a QA conference that I went to. Mm-hmm. And then it was the first keynote that I had ever done. And it was, you know, another leader who saw something in me, Stacey Kirk, who is well known in the testing community. She's got, you know, her amazing company that's doing such great work, Quality Works. Somebody asked her if there was somebody that was available, and she said my name, and it was okay. And then I was in this place of saying yes to things, and I think it was also just a little less scary because virtual. And
yeah,
I had done some speaking and prior to that, and it was something that I kept saying, it's not me. I like to be behind the curtains. I'm like Oz, you know, everybody else out front. I said yes, and I committed to having, I told myself, I want to have the best keynote of the conference. And I know that may come across as arrogant, but I wanted to push myself, and I sought out training and I read books. I went to this great training by this speaker leader, Melanie Spring, that was like a 90-day training. And it was so interesting because at the very end of that training was my keynote.
Okay,
and so I learned so much in that. But I found that while it was hard for me, it was actually, it helped me to shape what I believed. About quality in a way that was succinct, that was clear, that I could communicate, like, these are the things that I believe and here's why. And then when people responded to that and they were like, that's awesome. And I got LinkedIn messages and I was like, wow, I didn't choose it. It chose me. And moved me into coaching. It's been great.
It's great. And so often it seems that the things choose us, or, you know, maybe we have to put ourselves in the right position, but the timing is right or what have you, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting because I've spoken a few places too. And also with the podcast, you know, what motivated me was to try to reach more people than like where I work, you know, for example. It's interesting just to start something, well, and finish, hopefully. But yeah, no, that's a great story, Erica. Thanks for sharing that. And it's nice to have people in your network who have help support you and give you those opportunities too, right? So, and we pass it along. Your domain, from what I learned about you, you know, is in software quality. You do a lot of that professionally, have a long experience in that. But of all the things, when I reached out to you, you wanted to talk about core values. Mm-hmm. Why core values?
You know, we started this conversation a little while ago. So I think when you asked me, I was in a space where I had seen the effects, the impact of strongly held core values for a company that were embedded deeply into an organization. As I looked around, as I talked to others, as I began to do more coaching, I realized that other companies would say they had core values. And I had experienced this before. Yeah, we have core values, but I never knew them. I mean, I knew them, but I couldn't recall them. They weren't deeply embedded into the organization. They weren't a part of my one-on-ones. I couldn't hold the company accountable. I couldn't say, you're not walking this particular core value with this response to a leader or to the business and how we're operating outside, you know, with our customers and so forth. And that was not life-changing, but it was impactful. It was very impactful for me. And as I looked around and I did more coaching, I realized that others didn't have this medium, this model to leverage, to hold the business, hold their leaders accountable. And you see it right now with massive layoffs, right? You have some companies that are CEOs that are saying, we value our people and we won't do this because of XYZ. And we're, you know, we made good decisions. And I'm not saying that a company that is in a position that they need to lay people off for whatever reason doesn't have core values or isn't attempting to walk them out. It's the conversation that's happening outside of that, where the team members don't feel like they had the support, or they're just like, well, I guess I was just a number, you know, in the chain. It's that human part. And so I guess I wanted to talk about it because I think it's such an impactful thing for individuals, and it's our job in the company to help the company see the impact of those core values and to then begin to hold them accountable.
I don't know about you, but I know that when I've had discussions in the past about, let's say, the business or right, the company, it's kind of this faceless thing that isn't attributed with human beings, but there have to be human beings, whether it's a board of directors, CEO, executive team, et cetera, who make decisions, right? So it is an interesting prospect to me as you're talking about, you've seen a positive experience where you can hold the company, right? Or the leaders or each other accountable with core values. And I think that's fantastic. How common do you think it is for people to have a situation these days where they are dialed into what their companies are about and they have a mechanism to hold each other accountable, the business accountable, the leaders accountable, however you want to think of that?
I don't know that it's that common. In my coaching and in, you know, when I engage a company for like workshops and stuff like that, it's some of the things that I'm asking, what's your culture? Because your core values are going to drive your culture. And if they're embedded deeply, they're held closely in the hearts of the humans that are running the business, then you're going to get the culture that you wanted when you pen those core values. And some people are saying, yeah, I know my core values. And there'll be kind of this wavering, like, yeah, you know, like, I like this one. And so I'm asking how intentional they're being about the conversation. And when you have a culture that's centered around your core values, you're combining the conversation and you're empowering the people that are in the organization. And there's intention behind it. It's not what you see in organizations. It's like, yeah, we talk about our core values, but how are you using them? And that's the thing that I think is missing and why I wanted to talk about it, because we don't use them. They're there, but we're not using them.
So it's interesting. You're talking about working with clients in coaching sessions, helping them understand what the culture is really like with respect to the core values they have in the organization. I'd like to talk about maybe the intersection between core values of an organization and core values of a person. So how do I uncover my own core values? I mean, is this something I should just inherently know? Or, I mean, I do remember, Erica, once, I think it was maybe 4 years ago, Brené Brown wrote Dare to Lead. And in somewhere early on, there were like a list of a million values. And she's like, well, pick two or three of them. And she also asserted that, you know, there's no difference between business, your personal and your professional core values. I remember my one was follow through. I valued follow through. I'm just wondering what commentary you've got on that.
If you own a business, your personal values should, in theory, show up in your business core values, right? If you own the business, I would expect that would surface some. There would be some marriage of who you are as a person who's pouring into this venture that you want to see succeed. You know, oddly enough, when I talk to people about core values, I ask them what their pet peeves are. What's the thing that irritates you? And then I say, okay, uncover the offense, like remove the offense of the irritant. And then ask yourself why it bothers you. Right? So is it lack of consideration? Is it lack of care? What is the thing that's missing? And then what is it that you value about that? That's a core value. Like it's usually surfaces in like things that people you don't even know, like, oh, I hate that. Right? It's irksome. Why is it irksome? Why does it set you on edge? And it's an onion. You peel it away and then you uncover it's a lack of consideration. It's a lack of patience. It's a lack of grace. You're not thinking about the human in this, right? Like it's those things that begin to surface. And I think people should do the deep work to understand what their personal core values are. You have the clarity to then identify alignment of your core values with a company's. And that's going to get companies to get employees and keep employees. If they're understanding what the employees' core values are, the employees understand what their core values are, and they see that alignment with the business, and they know we're in sync.
That's a great explanation. I like you doing the deep work to uncover your core values. And I hadn't thought about that tactic of what really irritates you. I like that. What really irritates you, and then flip it a little bit. Would you be willing to share an example, maybe a specific example of where you have seen the positivity of living out core values in a business?
I think Calendly is closest to it because, again, we talked about the core values so much. As the organization just grew, as it matured, there was expectation of better support for marginalized groups, for underrepresented groups, albeit, you know, gender, race, sexuality. There was an expectation of support there. And it made the conversation easier. It challenged the business because the business, you know, had to balance making sure that there was equality, that you didn't offend somebody else's beliefs by supporting another person's beliefs. And I get that. And, you know, that's the world. But it was challenging the business through a model that mostly removes the sting.
Interesting.
This is how you start with human. These are the humans that you want to support. This is how you start with human, right? This is how you strive for excellence in this way, in supporting your employees or improving retention and those type of things. And so it made it easier to have those difficult conversations for employees to come to the business, to get the business to show up for them in the way that they want, for the culture that they wanted, because we as employees are the culture. And that's, right, I think, why I wanted to talk about core values and why I said that, because it's like, we miss that, you know, companies are saying, yeah, we want this culture. No, who are the people that you hired, and what core values have you given, have you fed into their hearts for them to create the culture?
Right.
And what does that surface as?
Yeah, culture of theory, or theory of culture versus reality. I mean, culture is the reality, right? Yeah. I mean, like you said, penning something down on paper as compared to living it out. That's a great example. Difficult conversations, huh? Yeah. Like you said. No, I mean, that's interesting. This might be a little tangential, but I know you're very active on LinkedIn, Erica, from what I can see, right? I mean, you definitely looks like you're reading a lot of stuff, commenting on a lot of stuff, things like that. So that's great to see that. I'm curious, you know, how well do you think we are having difficult conversations in writing over the internet? I mean, I don't mean that to be a loaded question around like, wow, commenting on Facebook stories is a nightmare. I mean, I more mean, you know, perhaps there's a certain mindset on LinkedIn of saying, hey, you know, this is a professional platform where now personal things are, of course, on the platform, right? How well do you think we're interacting in July of 2022 when it comes to some of these hard topics?
My person is professional. I person am a professional, and I take this back to the argument that certain hair in the Black community is not professional. I person am a professional. And when I think about the blue haired unicorn, Madison, she talks about like, I'm Black, I'm queer. Like these things don't change. And I'm also this person for my career. And it doesn't make me less or any more than anybody else. If somebody can celebrate somebody being married and, having a kid, I saw a post recently, a woman who worked at Microsoft. It was a shared post or a like post. So I wasn't sure who she was, but she worked at Microsoft. Microsoft has a healthy time off, apparently, for maternity leave. And She had just, she was just coming back and she had a picture of herself and her baby. She was still talking about profession. She's like, I had this time away from my career to support my newborn child. That's professional. Mm-hmm. I saw another post. I took the time off. My company allowed me nearly four plus weeks off to go get married and go on a honeymoon. That's professional. I'm talking to you about the intersection of my career and my personal life because I am a person in both of those conversations. I would like to hear less about this doesn't belong on LinkedIn. Why?
Yeah.
You know, I got a new puppy and he's charging into the office and he peed on the rug right behind me. I want to talk to you about how embarrassed I was in that conversation. I'm a person, or how my kid roamed into the room and interrupted the meeting and they thought it was cute. And I was terrified because it was so embarrassing because, you know, my child wanted to have a full conversation and stare at herself in the camera. I'm a person. We're telling people how they're expected to show up.
Mm.
And if you don't like the way they're showing up, look the other way.
It's interesting that, I mean, what you said about I'm a person and I'm professional, gosh, that sounds simple. I mean, it really
can't be professional without first being a person.
Yeah. It really sounds simple.
Yeah. There's so much judgment. If I don't like what you're saying, there are some things that I don't like seeing on LinkedIn. You know what I do? Oh, how did I get connected to you? Disconnect.
Yeah.
I don't agree with your core values. I don't agree with your messaging. I don't want to see that in my feed. Disconnect. I don't need to argue with you about it. There are definitely some things that's like, there's no agree, disagree on, right? Like I'm not going to get into politics. And there are some things that are just like, we can't agree to disagree on me being a person of value and stuff like that. But I also don't need to spend the time convincing you. And I think that's what happens is people are like, I need to convince you why you're wrong.
I liked what you said too, maybe about if my core values don't align with your core values, then maybe we just don't have to interact, right? I mean, let's talk about your core values a little bit. So I just pasted this from your very nice redesigned site, ericachestnut.com. The four core values here are start with human, which you've already said several times naturally in conversation. Give grace, be patient, strive for accountability, and be intentional. We've gone through start with human kind of incidentally quite a bit here, right? When you say give grace, be patient, what does that mean to you?
Give others and yourself the space. Give them the space to fail. Give them the space to succeed. Give them the space to laugh, to cry. Give them the space, whatever that space is they need, that's the grace. And then give them the time to recover, to settle, to balance. That's the patience. Give yourself and others. Maybe I'm coming in and I am excited by something, or I'm spun up about something. You know, when I think about my one-on-ones, I've got to give my team members the grace to be in that moment. And you know, we don't have infinite amount of time. So I do have to kind of rein it in some points, or work to identify, like, is there something that you need? Can I support you, et cetera? But then giving them that patience in that moment also to like, let me level out. That's the breath that you take. You see it with kids, right? When you tell, and I'm not saying that your team members or my team members or anybody is but children, I don't want that to come across that way. But like, when I think about my children, I sometimes just have to say, let's take a breath together, you know, in whatever it is, they failed at something and there's going to be a correction, but let's take a breath together and then let's move through it together. So grace and patience is about the space and recovery.
Start with human, give grace, be patient, strive for accountability, be intentional. How do you see the relationship in these four things for yourself?
They are all founded on start with human. And I got to plug Calendly again, because I definitely stole that from Calendly. I always talk about, I start and stop everything on relationship. Mm-hmm. And that is through communication and engaging. And it's starting with human. Like, where do we start there? And then it's like they sit on top of that. I mean, you know, when I'm starting with human, I've got to give grace and be patient. Mm. When I'm starting with human, I need to hold myself accountable to ask and asking how I can help, how I can support that other human. And when I'm being intentional, I am reaching purposefully for that other human. I am, they sit on top of start with human. It's the foundation. It's without that. Yeah. But yeah. They work to like, how am I supporting you? Some, you know, people say servant leadership, it's kind of buzzy. It became kind of a buzzword, right? But that's, that is what it embodies. That is when you break it apart. Like that's for me, what servant leadership is. I am, how am I serving this human in front of me? Do they need grace and patience? Do they need me to be accountable in supporting them somehow or finding ways that I can help? Do they need me to help hold them accountable? Do they need me to be intentional in something for them or for me or for us or for the company, et cetera?
So start with human, the foundation, the one that bears the load of the others or sets the others up, however you want to think about that. Love it. Okay. That's
now
great.
I got to do a diagram for that now that I hadn't considered it like that, you know, but it really is. It start with human is at the core of it.
No, that's great, Erica. Thank you. I wanted to, again, I've got your website up here. I'm looking at it. One of the tabs on your website is Powerhouse. What is that all about?
That is coming soon. Okay. I'm a woman in tech. I am a Black woman in tech. I am the minority in the room most times. I am a Black woman in tech leader. I can count one time on my hands where I have been not been the only woman in the room reporting to the C-suite. Hmm. The only Black person in the room reporting to my direct C-suite. I can count one time that's happened. And so Powerhouse, which is the question, Powerhouse, as I shifted from Calendly, as I really began to dive into coaching and having women specifically reach out to me and really just finding in that what I believed about women in tech and what I had learned in my career and what I wish I knew earlier, I was like, I just want to share this. I want to share it. And I would get feedback, you know, from women that just would have a 10-minute call with me. And it would be, gosh, you're going to make me cry. Or, man, I never thought about it like that. Or, man, I needed this today. And I want to give that to more women. And so it's a course. It's a course and community for women in tech like me. And emerging leaders. There are so many executive leadership platforms, coachings, those things. But that space where someone like a Miriam, who is excellent in all of these ways and could benefit from somebody helping them turn the box on their idea of leadership, their idea of what it means to climb the proverbial corporate ladder. Helping, you know, when I think about another person who, helping them gain the clarity so that they have the confidence that they need to step out there. Because as women, we deal with, and men do too, I know, but women especially deal with imposter syndrome. We are, again, the minority. We're 70% of, you know, approximate, it fluctuates, but 70% of people in technology are men.
Yeah, I totally believe in that. Yeah.
Right? 30% are women. Yep. It's easy. The language is different. The viewpoint is different. And that's why we need to work on diversity. It's, you know, the whole idea of the Apple Watch came out and didn't have a period tracker or these type of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's like all of that, but it's we've got to be competent enough to speak up. And we have to have clarity about who we are, what we do, what our value is, what our strengths are, so that we can confidently say, that's not my lane, but let me tell you all about what is my lane and how amazing it is and why you want to speak with me and why I can, how I can help you. And in these type of things, like we get so caught up in what we are afraid we can't do or won't show up as, and we sometimes forget. And so Powerhouse is about really pouring into women in tech and helping them gain their clarity by identifying their North Star, working on looking at their communication style, their leadership DNA. I call it kind of their Powerhouse profile. Mm-hmm. What is it, you know, are you results oriented? Are you an influencer or a steady or a dominant kind of organizer? And what does that look like? And how do you leverage those as your strengths and move in technology as a woman in tech?
I love the relationship between so many of the things so far here. The Powerhouse course, helping women in tech with so many elements and finding that confidence, because with the confidence, you then have the, you can speak up around the accountability more. Like you're saying, if you have a bunch of core values in your business, but you don't have the confidence to speak up to it or the safety, you know, let's just say it's not quite safe enough yet for you. You got to break over, right? Break through to have mm-hmm. with your confidence. I love the relationship between that because you can see how these things could start to feed each other. Yeah, it's great.
I can't tell you how many times there were times where I was speaking up and after the meeting and sometimes even during the meeting, I would get pings. Thank you for saying that. And it was always women. And you've got to sometimes, what is it? Do it scared, do it anxious, do it fearful, do it stressed, worried, all these different things. And I had that, but I had to just do it because I had a voice. I had a seat at a table that others were not at.
Yeah.
And just like Stacey Kirk, she had a seat at a table that I wasn't at and she pulled me into the conversation and it completely changed what I'm doing. I still love quality, but I found this new love and value of quality, culture, and leadership. These three things that all for me are this beautiful trifecta that I love to speak about. And that started with her bringing me into the room. And it starts with me being in a space and speaking up about something that I'm hearing others say in private to me and being the person that's like, this isn't okay and challenging. And we all have to have that clarity so that we can get that confidence.
And I related to what you're just saying there too. If you're thinking it, somebody else is probably thinking it anyway, right? So
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't be afraid to ask the silly questions. Yeah, right? That too. Right. Somebody has to do it, you know? And if you're always asking the silly questions, you're going to be the first to know the answer.
That's a good point.
if you walk in the door, and you say, I don't know. And every time you say I don't know, you ask the question, you will never not know. It will be the new thing. And they'll be like, oh yeah, you don't know because I didn't tell you. And that's hard. I will say that's hard for me even because you never want to show up and feel like that you don't know something or they expect you to know something. But if you start at the beginning saying, I don't know what that is. What is that? And then they tell you. And then the next thing that surfaces, as long as it's different, don't keep asking what this is.
Right, exactly.
Your boss is going to be like, listen, I just had this conversation with you. Yeah, if you don't ask the silly question, you're never going to know. But if you ask, you'll be the first to know.
Well, great stuff today. I've got to ask you before we go, the same question I ask everybody. It doesn't have to be related to work or anything, but what is something that you've learned recently?
Perfectionism breeds procrastination. I connected it with progress over perfection. Like I always thought, oh yeah, I'm not a perfectionist. I make progress. I struggled with procrastination and I couldn't figure out why. I was like, why? Like, get it done, get it. And it was because it was the perfectionism hiding. It was masked inside of procrastination. It was a breeding ground for it. And so when I find that I'm stalling or when I find that like I'm not looking at that. It's like, okay, what is it that I'm not moving forward? What is the next best step? What is the thing that I'm stalling on because I don't feel it's going to be perfect or I'm not going to show up well? And I deal with this like social media. I got to post out. I want to talk to people. I can't tell you the Trello board that I have of half-baked social media posts that I just need to click the button on. And you'll see people say like, I did 30 days, 90 days, 60 days, every day I posted and I got better and I got more confident and I got more comfortable. It's hard. You have to really like just saying progress over perfection, I think wasn't clicking for me until I realized that it was perfectionism that was a breeding ground for procrastination. I said, oh, I can now I can say, am I stalling? What am I trying to make 100% right? Mm. And it helps me to propel forward. Hence my new site launch. I got it done in a week and I can tell you that it's not perfect, but it is much better and has more clarity and things that I really wanted to put out there for people to see and know and share about what I believe in opportunities with me. But it's now there. I'll just continue to tweak it.
Exactly. And thanks for sharing and being open about the idea there. I think a lot of people will probably identify with that, or, you know, one way or the other, it'll plant a seed. I think a lot of people will probably hear that. And the knowledge worker domains, right? I mean, there are a lot of intrinsically motivated people who are capable of doing a lot of amazing things. And it wouldn't shock me if a lot of people are experiencing similar. I appreciate it all today, Erica. I'm so happy to have been able to talk to you finally. And so much great stuff here about core values, tough conversations, et cetera, et cetera. For those who are interested in learning a little bit more about you or about what you're up to, your services, ideas, et cetera, where would you like to direct them? And they can also check the show notes, but where would you like to direct them?
www.ericachestnut.com, Erica with a K, chestnut.com, or find me on LinkedIn. Love to talk to new people on LinkedIn.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much, Erica. It's been fun for me and I had a good time talking. So thanks for putting some time aside and have a good rest of the day.
Yeah, thank you. It was great to be here. I appreciate it.